This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2.
When you haven't got a stable roof over your head, it's hard to get anywhere in life. And that's why on Wednesday, April 18, there's a campaign called Youth Homelessness Matters Day. And with me in the studio is a young man who knows only too well how tough things get when you don't have somewhere to call home. His name is Simon Byrne, and he's one of the founders of the Youth Homelessness Representative Council. Simon, welcome.
Thank you.
Simon, you're no longer homeless now. So before we get into your story, I want you to just tell me a bit about yourself now. How old are you and what are you into? What do you do with yourself right now?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm 25. Look, my week is pretty jam-packed. I study full-time, so I'm studying marketing and communication. I work part-time as well in a very boring administration job. It's so much fun. I split my time up between cooking, hanging out with my friends. I'm an avid knitter.
Oh, that is so cool.
Which is a big thing in my life. I'm also a Rotarian and a Rotaractor.
Yeah, right.
For those who are really cool. That know about that, that takes up like so much of my life.
And just as an aside before we get into the serious questions, so with your knitting, are you one of those guys that wraps poles in the street and stuff like that?
No. I'm only good at a plane and a purl.
Okay.
So that's the extent of my... I tried to do a sleeve last week with a third needle and I was like, whoa, mind blown.
Oh, it's bringing back memories of my nana. Anyway, I want to get into your story.
Yep.
So you had a rough road before you got to this place where you are now. How old were you when you first found yourself, I guess, out on the street or without a stable home?
Between 14 and 15, like I had experiences of it. So like, you know, I'd have a fight with the family and so I'd, you know, go crash at a friend's place or something like that.
Yeah,
and that kind of happened. But after a few days and after, you know, kind of, because I'm a country boy, so I didn't have a lot of options growing up in a very rural village.
Yep.
You know, I'd kind of have to go home. So I don't tend to kind of usually count those early years. But my main stint with homelessness started when I was 16. So I ended up... you know, happy to leave the country because it just wasn't anything there. There was no help. There was no resources. So I basically had to jump on the old XBT and I came to Sydney with no money and no idea what I was going to do with my life or anything like that. And for those first 2 years, that was probably the hardest. So I would have slept in about 13 different places. Some were refuges, some were mates' houses, some were people that warning bells would have went off for any other person, but, you know, they're the options. Mm. I did have, so I did a fair bit of hard sleeping at times.
As in on the street.
Yeah, so that was on the street. And I, you know, I had my favourite spots.
Mm.
I call them favourite spots. I just like them because, you know, they, there were things like that, you know, you could fall asleep there for a few hours and people probably wouldn't notice you and stuff like that. After that 2 year period, so that was when I was about getting into like 18, things started to stabilize a little bit more and I could find more long-term support. And it was pretty much services from there on, but it was really hard. That 2 year period was just super rocky.
Mm. What were the events that led up to that? You obviously had a lot of family conflict and that sort of thing.
So I grew up in an insanely traditional country household. We used to have to lump buckets of water up to boil if we wanted to have a bath and, you know, it was very, very country, which I love parts of it. But my, like I was raised in a single parent house. I lost my mum when I was very young and, you know, my dad did the best he could with the skills that he had. But what kind of made it really hard was that my family had experienced a lot of complex trauma and a lot of generational issues. And, you know, when you live in a remote town where there's no one really to turn to, you know, the family is the ones and it usually...
the cycle repeats.
Yeah. Mm. It was a mixture of that. You know, I had a fair bit of physical kind of abuse and emotional abuse growing up. But I suppose the biggest thing that the reason why I left and why I had to leave was just that there was just no opportunity. Mm. There was nothing there for me.
Nowhere to go.
There wasn't even an option to get counselling to make it better. There was no opportunity for me to, like, pull my dad aside and go, Dad, I need your help. And you know, it's impossible to, like, a 16-year-old, you know, to be able to stand up to their 47-year-old dad and go, hey, like, I know you've been my parent for 16 years, but I need you to listen now and we need to heal and grow. That just that it just doesn't work.
Wasn't going to happen.
And there was no one really there to help with that. I had to leave and...
Yep. So in those few years that you were homeless...
Firstly, so all up 7 years.
7 years.
Yeah.
When you were sleeping on the streets,
yep.
Was that frightening? Do you often feel in danger?
I did, but look, eventually I got into a survival mode where... Yeah, and this is really, like, my story is really common for a lot of young people who experience hard sleeping, is we kind of, after the first few nights, your brain just shuts down and go, look, I didn't get attacked, I didn't get sexually assaulted, I didn't get beaten, I didn't get harassed by a few drunk guys coming home from the pub, a winner. Like, that's it. Like, I've got those good ones. I know it's okay. You do, like, you know, when the rats would knock over the bin, it would wake me up in a panic and stuff like that. And, you know, but you get really smart and really strategic about it. So, you know that garbage collection happens on certain nights around certain alleys. So you know that you can hide in between the kind of fire escape and, like, certain places. And that's how, young, like, a lot of young people are forced to think. They're kind of like, all right, well... I know that on this day I can go to this place because these people aren't going to be here. And, you know, like a lot of young people will just go and pitch a tent in Centennial Park. And what they'll do is they'll find, say, like 15 people, 15 of their friends, and they'll kind of congregate. Because
safety in numbers.
Well, yeah, sometimes like you really need that safety in numbers because, you know, when you're a 17-year-old girl or young boy, you know, like...
You're vulnerable.
You're just too vulnerable. Mm. And a lot of people often... You know, they see that hard exterior of why young people function like that, but that's only because we've just got to keep ourselves safe, especially in that environment.
What are the practical difficulties when you haven't got a place called home? So how does it affect your ability to eat, sleep, get a shower, study, find employment?
This is a fun one. So I'll separate hard sleeping from service support. When you're in hard sleeping, you got no hope.
Mm.
No hope of getting a job. No hope of getting into school. No hope of accessing services. There's plenty of places where you can access for food and things like that, but it's tricky and it's hard. It's like, all right, it's daylight. I'm going to go and wait at, say, Oasis, which are an organization in the city, and I'm going to camp out there until they open at 9, and then I'll hit the worker up for, like, a food voucher or something like that. You know, little tasks become a huge thing, like getting your clothes washed. And I know that sounds trivial, but it was a big shame feeling for me was not being able to just have clean clothes.
Mm.
And I used to have to catch a train to Ashfield and then walk from Ashfield to wash it and then, you know, just bum around and wait for the clothes. And it just...
Everything is a drama. Yeah.
And you can't get Centrelink. So you actually, you know, for people who are living on the street, you need an address. Nothing can work when you're hard sleeping. It's basically just let's get through the night without being murdered, without being attacked. And if we can get through that, tomorrow's the new day. But when you're in services, sometimes it can be easier and sometimes it's not. A lot of things are taken care of when you live in a refuge, like, you know, you've got somewhere to shower, you've got clean clothes, you've got food, you've got somewhere to sleep. From my experience, 95% of the places that I slept at, I would say would be safe. There are, of course, when you're dealing with other young people that have been through trauma and stuff like that, there's always a kind of fear factor and a risk in living in a refuge.
Yeah.
But then you've got the other issue of, well, now that I've got Centrelink and now that I've kind of starting to tick these boxes, how do I, you know, because you have to pay rent when you live in a refuge. A lot of people don't realise that.
Mm.
How do you go and access to figure out, well, I need interview clothes? You know, how do you articulate? Yeah, right. How do you attend school? How do you, you know, get yourself up in the morning? The responsibility that's put on you as a young person at 16, like, it's crazy. We expect young people to go out and find a job, you know, go and do something good with yourself and all those kind of comments that you get, you know, but even just getting, like, into Centrelink. And sitting there for days on end trying to get them to process something or get Medicare cards, getting health, all those issues. Unfortunately, when you're in a refuge, it doesn't mean that it's like everything's solved.
Yeah.
It just basically means you're going from, all right, well, I might die tonight to now I'm living in a refuge. Mm. Well, the chances of me dying are very, very low, but now how do I actually have a life? How do I build anything? And unfortunately, a lot of due to funding issues and policy changes, the average stay is 3 months and a young person has to apply for another service. To get financial aid, the minimum you have to be living in a place is 6 months. Mm-hmm. So if you don't get that, you got to start all over again. You're back to the start. And
so frustrating.
Well, it is. And a lot of, like, it's since my days, it's actually gotten so much harder. So there's a lot less refuges now. And there's...
Why is that?
Well, a lot of things. So there was a... Look, and I'm going to get a bit political, but it was a very uninformed policy decision many years ago. Go home, stay home. And it was basically of the attitude that it's the parents' responsibility to look after these kids. It's not the government's job. These young people, they just need to go home. Oh, I'm sorry, you have to do chores. Trust me, if I had a choice between doing my chores and living in a refuge, I would be a maid. if that solved my situation, I would do it.
Mm.
Like, so I've, you know, 7 years and 10 years around the kind of community development sector. I'm going to tell you flat out, I've only ever met 0.5% who, with therapy, with support, with willing parents, with actual, you know, long-term care, could they reintegrate the family and could they make that family work?
Mm.
These young people are not homeless because you're not allowed to go to that concert. Look, I'm sure that there's people that probably do end up in that situation, but they don't stay. They definitely don't stay.
That's right. A kid will quickly discover that they're quite happy to have a bathroom of their own and,
and go home. Yeah, exactly. You know, and the thing is, we do chores in refuges. Yeah. I don't know. This might be a shock to some people, but, you know, like, we do have responsibilities and there are consequences if we don't. You know, we have curfews and... all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
So you've touched on a lot of the misconceptions that there are about homeless young people, which is that kind of myth that, oh, just go home and behave yourself.
Yeah. And I really hope that people can take away that I promise you that's not the case. Like, I could tell you probably 30 stories of friends of mine who, through no fault of their own, there just was no home.
Mm.
You know, I had a young friend of mine who her parents just separated and they said, hey, look, I'm sorry. We just can't look after you anymore. You know, that's not her fault. And she was incredibly intelligent, incredibly smart, you know, but she ended up in a refuge.
What message would you like to give people about Youth Homelessness Matters Day?
Yes. Yeah, so, like, we actually have an event at Prince Alfred Park this coming Wednesday, and that information is available on our website. If you'd like to come along, it's amazing. We have some really cool guests. There's lots of prizes. It's going to be really fun. The one thing I'd love everyone to do is just take a second, like, if you see, like, a homeless youth and you're frustrated about it, just take a second to be aware of the language that you use. Unfortunately, we use words like deviants and mongrels and, you know, feral kids that are involved in all these gangs, and I can give you a list of 100 people that I know that are good kids. And, you know, it starts with the language. It starts with how you speak to your children about it.
Kindness goes a long way, doesn't it?
It does.
Before we wrap up, I want to ask you, for people listening, if there's young people in their world, particularly like youth workers, people, teachers that work around a lot of young people, would you say there's any signs of a homeless young person that we can look out for and how we can help that person?
Yes. Yeah, so I would definitely say for the people at home, particularly, you know, mum and dads that are listening, homelessness isn't just people like myself who have done hard sleeping. You know, we also consider couch surfing as a big part of homelessness. And that might be something along the lines of, I'll hit my friend's mum up and be like, hey, can I crash here? My, like, my mum's going on a holiday, or, you know, something along those lines. And the things that we will see, they tend to withdraw at school, sporting events. They tend to draw back and kind of do what they can manage. There could be an issue at home. And a lot of the time, young people are so resourceful. They know that if they've got, like, a good friend who can, like, shelter them for a few weeks, I'm just going to go, like, hang out with my mate, recover a little bit, and then I can go back home.
And what help would you put them in touch with if you find out a young person is really struggling with things at home?
One of the biggest things I would recommend to people is, because, you know, there's the stereotypical answer of, you know, school counselling and stuff like that, which is, look, some people, that's a fantastic option. You get amazing counsellors out there. They're a great, really resourced. If you do know, if a young person has actually said, yeah, I don't have somewhere safe to sleep, there are options. So there's a link to home number, which you can Google. At Y Foundations, we actually have a website that has services and things that you can connect with.
Yfoundations.org.au.
Yes. But just reaching out to local community centres, I would say for the people at home, just be patient with yourself about it. You know, to quote my country father, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't force them to drink it. You know, they're going to look for help when they feel they need it.
When they're ready.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for your time. We've been chatting with Simon Burns. If you want to chat to him, you can hit him up on Twitter at SimonBurns466, B-Y-R-N-E-S. And he represents Y Foundation.
Thanks for listening. Start your day with Life Words. Subscribe to Hope 1032's free daily email devotional at hope1032.com.au.